Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Saturn Vox podcast, where discussions of philosophy meet the liminal space we weave in dreams. This is your host and Eros enthusiast, Mikala Ann. Today, we are celebrating the season 2 premiere of Saturn Vox with a very special guest. Author, magician, simple country metaphysician, and the man who wrote the book I first started learning tarot from, Lon Milo Duquette. Lon and I were introduced by my friend and former podcast guest, Chris Sanders, and I was very lucky to get a chance to talk with him back in July. It's a cozy, comfortable episode, jam-packed with lots of wisdom and metaphysical nuggets of insight. We laugh, we joke, we chat angels and demons with a bit of erotic mysticism on the side. What is sex magic really all about? Can we evoke archangels? Where does the will fit into it all? And what's the deal with that John D. guy anyway? All this and more on today's episode of Saturn Vox. To find out more on Saturn Vox, check out their Instagram and Twitter, at Saturn Vox, or visit their website, www.saturnvox.com. If you want to support the show towards goals of better equipment, merch, and bonus material, please check out the Patreon at www.patreon.com/saturnvox, where one can join in on our book club and Discord communities.
So people think that, oh, gee, well, is this because the Gnostic Mass has a priest and a priestess? Is this all, you know, exclusively a heterosexual act? No, is the sun being lit? Are the stars shining because of they're heterosexual? Would they go out, you know, if we use the metaphor of, a different combination of things? No, you know, everybody's missing the big point if they think that's what it's about. But it does deal with the basic transcendence of duality. And that's a consciousness thing, not a biological thing.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. Actually, my studies as far as erotic mysticism go are very based out of Kabbalah, the Song of Songs. So to me, it's like the will being that fire that sits in my sacral chakra is Eros. And in that way, the will to open and receive or to penetrate any moment is in and of itself sex magic. Even not, I'm not masturbating and I'm not having sex with another human, but I am experiencing the erotic by doing that.
Right. And you can see that process in action in your own physiological responses, in your own physiological attractions, release, arousals, and things like that. So it's just an easy vocabulary to talk about. Plus, we have basically the same interests, but Constance's interest in magic is kind of different than mine. She's sees everything from a different angle, and if the truth be known, she sees everything from a more correct angle. On the surface, she doesn't like Kabbalah, you know. And when we created our tarot deck, she wasn't crazy about the Kabbalistic aspect of it or the magic aspect of it. But, there are certain colors that are assigned to specific cards and things like that. So from an artistic point of view, an emotional artistic point of view, that's how she... expressed what I was cold-bloodedly and cold-heartedly putting in Kabbalistic terms.
I like that, though, because there's a Hyros Gamos in that in and of itself. Like, she had the artistic kind of unconscious, creative element of the deck, while you had the cold, hard science and the facts that are going to penetrate the mind. So that sounds like a good combination to have, even if you're not thinking about it as sex magic. That in and of itself was an alchemical process. The art card being produced by the two of you.
Yeah. And that's how everything, as far as Enochian magic, she doesn't do Enochian magic, but she sat through 48 years of our Monday night magic class. So she's up to here with Enochian already, you know, and she knows enough Enochian to be a ruthless heckler at my Enochian classes and things like that. But once you've wrapped your meat brain around what exactly spirits are and what angels are and what a different hierarchy of angels are, once you've sort of outgrown the idea that these are superstitiously objective beings out there and not a level of your own consciousness as a reflection of the big whatever it is consciousness. Once you've overcome that, once you've grown up out of that literal objectification of the spirits, they actually become more real, more concrete to you, okay? And you really are capable of interfacing with your own then physiological responses. And in other words, you know what it is you're falling in love with when you're falling in love with and mating with a spiritual being. Mm.
So just for the audience's clarifications, I don't know how many people listening would have like read your books like Low Magic or Enochian Magic to just know what your delineation of what those two different classes of spirits are. Because I know it's not like angels are high and good and demons are low and bad. So can you just explain a little bit to our audience?
Well, ask me something specific because...
Okay, so from reading your books, my interpretation of what like demons are and what angels are is angels are basically archetypal builders. They're very much like above mind, but of complete mind and maybe logos and maybe less emotionality, more just like mathematics type thinking. Whereas demons are denser in energetic body and have like a closer relationship to the emotions that and share like emotionality with humans and have more animistic, like nature-based attributes. Am I right? Am I on the money? Am I off the money here?
You're 100% right. First of all, angels, demons, intelligences, spirits, they are what you make them. And they're as real as the powers they represent. So you can call them anything. What we've inherited is a body of literature of what other magicians have made them. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've got our own material to work with, and the only reason that we're working with it is for our own personal convenience. So we create the magical universe that we're working with, and so it would be just as easy to make up an entire hierarchy of spirits from the Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
You could do that, okay? But we've inherited, a body of literature, and a lot of it comes from medieval times and older than that, and a lot of Arab way of looking at things, and from magicians that had a very, they were wise and talented magicians, but they were also had a level of superstition, and that actually helped them. A modern magician is sort of at a disadvantage because we're not superstitious and we have to translate everything. It actually helps. And no matter how scientific and rational you are, to make magic work, to get inside yourself to the level where you're actually working with these forces and energies, you temporarily buy into the fact that these are real live. I whipped up a demon and I interrupted his poker game with other demons, and he's pissed that I got him in this triangle, and I better know what I'm doing. But ultimately, you're making them up yourself, and they are what you make them to be. And you can be better informed in the same way that a great actor delivers a better performance and affects a change in the consciousness of the audience when they're skilled actors. And a poor actor doesn't affect much of a change in the audience except their ridicule. Okay. In a way, that's the only difference. It's been convenient for us to think of angels as a hierarchy of spiritual forces that come most directly from the source of everything. Okay. It's convenient for us to think of the singularity of the supreme, what it is. That's what I call God, what it is. It's easier for us to think of them as being so close to the source that their job is to be executors of a descending level of conscious energy, like an archangel. We've got four fundamental forces that physicists tell us, gravity, the weak force, the strong force, electromagnetic. Look at it that way. Okay, there is the source that we don't know what it is or where it came from. All we know is that it is a singularity that within which everything else are just descending frequencies of its consciousness. And the lower the frequency, the more multiplicity that we see, and the more specific their little duties are. We could look at that singularity as God, in the classic medieval way of looking at God. And then we could call these four fundamental forces, we could call those the archangels. Mm-hmm. Okay, the electromagnetic might be water. Or the Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. That's the Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh-ness of expressions. And, of course, radiation and stuff would be fire and all that. But anyway, so let's say that one of the archangels is gravity, earth, the earth, the hey final type thing. So that's an archangel. And that's they got huge responsibilities. Okay. They've got all the gravitational responsibilities in the cosmos. So everything that happens from me picking up my watch and dropping it and everything else, there's an archangel responsible for that. But that archangel has a bunch of angels working for it that do more specific gravitational duties. and you could call the archangel gravity, call him gravity ale. Okay. What's pulling this dice here toward the center of the earth? That could be drop ale. Okay. Or when you lift something up like this, that'd be another angel that would be called slide AL. And interfacing with liquid would be drip AL. And then when it hits, that'd be splat AL. So they've all got little different things. Now, if you want to get in touch with and have any sort of control over or influence on splat AL, you have to first recognize gravity AL is what's ruling the whole thing. And that's the pecking order of spirits, the hierarchical pecking order that the Kabbalists were just, they must have had so much time on their hands because they dissected, you know, right down to the micromanagement of every one of those gravitational duties, gave them a name that really made sense mathematically and everything else. But what was really going on was there was this funneling meditative exercise in the magician's own mind that served to funnel and then focus this huge gravitational reality and focus it right down to, I want this to drop into my lap right now. And so it wasn't the angels that you were working with, because they're everywhere. Somebody wrote me and said, you know, why can't I evoke an archangel? Or, you know, evoke an archangel. You don't need to do anything. Just gravity ale. Just look north. Gravity ale is everywhere, from east to west, with your nose pointed. That's gravity ale. You don't have to call him in. He's already there. Uriel. We call him Uriel now.
Uh-huh.
Don't worry about calling him. He's right in your face right now. What you really want to find out is how to get a more specific job done with Forlock or, you know, one of the guys that works for him. You don't go to the general of an army to say, I need somebody to peel potatoes in the KP. Okay. You go to the sergeant that's in charge of the private who's going to peel those potatoes.
Oh, that's such a good point. And I love how what you're talking about here is not only reminding me of the four Kabbalistic worlds, but also it is kind of how it works in the Enochian tables as well. And I loved what you were saying about the earth, gravity AL, the earth tablet. Now let's look for the water line in the earth tablet, and there's my drop of water.
Right. And that's just absolutely perfect. And the beauty of the Enochian system is, oh, I do this call in the Enochian language. You read it as best you can. But it does affect a change in your consciousness, even if you totally screw it up. Okay. And then, to get to that line, there's another little call, and I do that. And to get to that little column thing that has maybe the secondary attribute of what I want, there's another call that does that. Not only that, but within that subangle, I've got his boss and the boss of that boss and the boss of it. And you've got it right in front of you, and you know how to spell its name too. And after you're through with all of those calls, which are pretty wild, actually you get pretty good at it, and it sort of makes you stoned at the end of it. And there's other things that you can do of Enochian nature that that really gets you zoned out while you're doing it, then you're just quiet for a while. You don't tell them to go do anything they don't do any heavy lifting for you, but they can sure give you a vision that gives you insight of how you can go ahead and do the heavy lifting of what you would like to get done.
Oh, okay. So that's a good point, because one of my friends who is extremely into like conjure and like physical types of magic was asking me, what is the point of things like that? Like, what is the point of doing ceremonial magic? And is it just to talk to God? And if so, like, I'm poor and I don't have time for all that. To which I was like, well, I feel like the subtle changes of your consciousness that you experience when you're like putting on the masks of these angelic or dyadic or even goetic entities can teach you about yourself, teach you about the world, and put you at in a better seat of wisdom. So that's your opinion as well, or
it's like to really cut through all sorts of other explanations. More technical, and it's a really good question. Why are you doing this stuff? Okay, you could ask anybody. It's like the kids on a playground. Well, that's what I am. What are you? Or what are the? You know, that's what you are. What am I? You could just turn it around and say, "Well, why are you doing what you do?" The thing is, it is something that you actually do. Anything that you actually do, not that you think about it, not that you read about it, it's something you do to effect a change that you think needs to happen. That's as simple as it is.
Within yourself only?
Now, look at it this way. Yes and no. Because, let's... the classic magic thing. If magic works, why don't you do it to win the lottery, man? You know? That's a good question. Okay. Now, because people win the lottery. They do. It happens twice a week in California. But it's just never happened to me. Okay. So I have to assume that whatever it is that I'm doing, and I go down to the liquor store and, you know, buy a ticket, you know, that's doing something. Can't win if you don't play, kind of thing. But the reason I didn't win must be that I'm just not the type of person that winning the lottery happens to. And no matter what kind of brilliant person or an idiot who won the lottery last night is, obviously, they're the type of person that winning the lottery happens to. So, magic to win the lottery wouldn't be how you write the numbers out and then you cause some demon to change the numbers as those little balls drop, you know. No, you've got to change yourself into the type of person that winning the lottery happens to. And that's big stuff. Okay, obviously it's never worked for me. But when we get to more specifics, like with goetic evocation, those spirits, and you mentioned that, well, they're lower and grosser and stuff like that. Well, yes, just relatively speaking, they're blind forces that do the heavy lifting in the universe. Unlike angels who control infinite amounts of lower frequency things, that do the heavy lifting. So, but to cast any kind of moral, you know, virtue to angels over Goetic spirits. No, I'm sorry. Angels are just as slaves to their situation as the demons are. Trouble is that demons actually do stuff, or that order of spiritual force actually pushes stuff around on the material plane. And if they're uncontrolled or undirected, can be dangerous. And that's why they get such a bad rap. It's nobody would say that a caterpillar or a piece of heavy machinery is evil or satanic. As a matter of fact, without those things, you couldn't build a temple. You couldn't build a parking lot without it. So you'd say, well, that's good. Okay. But that's good because there's a driver. There's an experienced driver that has control over that awesome power. But if you'd left the key in the steamroller, if you left the key in and it left it running overnight, okay, and it goes through the fence and just runs down every car and knocks down buildings and stuff in the middle of the night, you'd say that's an evil machine. Okay, that's a deadly evil machine. Goetic spirits are like that. But in order to, say, get the lottery, you're going to have to figure out some weird little way that you're the type of person that the lottery happens to. That means when you do a Goetic evocation or use a Solomonic formula, you're evoking upon yourself an adventure. You're going to go on an adventure. If you want the girl next door to fall in love with you, the reason she's not in love with you is you're not the type of person she falls in love with. You're, in order to get her to fall in love with you, she's her own magician. You're not going to work on her. Mm-hmm. Sorry, don't work that way. You've only got yourself to work with. What kind of an adventure would you have to go through to turn yourself into the kind of person that she falls in love with? And of course, you don't see it that way because you're locked into the romance of the Goetic evocation. Whether you see it or not, that's what's going to happen. That's why they say it's so dangerous. Because if it's really your will, if it's really in the cards for you to have her fall in love with you, maybe she can only fall in love with a guy with no legs.
Ha ha. And then before you know it, you're legless.
Yeah. And she brings you over some soup after your operation, and she sees you there, and she has pity on you, and then she comes over the next day with a cake, and the next day, and then she falls in love with you. Now, are you really, do you love her that much to turn yourself into the type of person and the only type of person she could fall in love with? That's the adventure. And almost every Goetic magician that has a hair-raising story to tell of what happened, how their life just totally went to hell, how all sorts of terrible things happened to them. That's their adventure. And if they don't see it as such, they're missing the big point about what that type of magic is and what it's meant to do.
Yeah, that made me think of two things. The first being like this, the idea of the adventure really reminds me, and like, oh, well, if you're poo-pooing that adventure that you went on, then you maybe missed the point. That is making me think again of that am I being receptive to this moment, to this experience? Like, am I in Eros with this moment? So it's again kind of hearkening back to, can we truly appreciate every energy that the all being, you know, emanates outward? And can we truly unconditionally love the all being is my term for the singular deity. You know, and if I really want to be in devotion to that all being, then I need to even love unconditionally the moments in which my life is falling apart.
Right, right.
And that's an adventure.
That's an adventure. And in a way, you're showing disrespect, not only to yourself, but the big whatever it is, big what it is. You're showing disrespect by refusing to observe what's going on and refusing to observe your situation. Everybody's a magician, but a conscious magician is a person that's willing to actually observe their own circumstances and to observe what's going on. And, truly, that in itself is a level of awakeness that 99.99% of the world's population is really not engaged in.
Unfortunately. Yeah. But it's good. That's what we are here as magicians in a way to kind of subvert the status quo. And if the status quo is one in which is closed to the moment, then the most radical thing that we as magicians can do is be open to the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. The other thing that what you had said earlier made me think of about working with the Goetia and like becoming the type of person she could fall in love with or becoming the type of person who could win the lottery. I'm wondering how Will fits into that. I'm going to try to phrase this question to you as best I can, but it's almost as if in my mind, either I must have been born with the will to be a magician who subverts my own fate, and that in and of itself is my will, or for me to will myself, like, why would I will to be someone that I'm not? Like, if she's not going to love me for me, it doesn't compute in the way that I understand will for it to be my will to be someone she could love. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And put that way, it's highly unlikely that is your will. And so one of the great contributions that Crowley's Thelema has given the modern magician is the fact that you really don't have, ultimately you have no choice but to do your will. And your will is not your whim, your wants, your desire. It's something else. Now, like the Kabbalists look at stuff. You and me, it seems like there's two of us here. I can even see our voices on the little meter here. Okay, it's like there's two of them. Okay, but if we would wake up to what we really are, we'd see that we're just talking to ourselves. But we're not awake enough to see that at the moment. That's a mental. I can accept the fact that someday we're all going to wake up and realize we've been each other all along. That's just how this consciousness works. We can't be anything but the big whatever it is. But until then, okay, it seems like there's you and me and lots of stuff around us. See, I can't, you know, pack that into my meat brain. As a matter of fact, we can never pack it into our meat brains. Okay. Yep. eventually the meat has to be transcended. But the will, at any given stage, we have a will at every stage of asleepness. And it's easiest to look at that as, I wouldn't even be here and be conscious and be self-aware at whatever level I'm self-aware at the moment. I wouldn't even be here if there wasn't a reason for me to be here. Not that there's a big divine plan, Lon's going to give a cure to cancer, you know. It may be that, but I doubt it. There wouldn't be a need in the universe at this level for my existence if there wasn't a need for my existence at this level. That means that there's something that needs to be done right now at this level, at this frequency of consciousness, that can only be done by me. And then that's my job. It's my job to do that. And if I'm not doing that or doing something that is helping me do that, I'm working against the entire universe at this level. So it's not so much, remember, and they were right when the Christian mystic says, I want to do the will of God.
Not my will, but thy will. Wait, it's the same thing.
Right. And that's really good as far as it goes. And whoever probably said that at first was at a level of consciousness where it really made sense that that my and thine is the same freaking thing, okay? But it's much easier. I mean, it's difficult, but it's easier to rack your soul to recognize what your will really is than it is to try to figure out the will of the great whatever it is and then attempt to cooperate with it. Okay. It's never going to happen that way. Okay. But doing your will, and you're never sure exactly what your will is, but you have hints in your life on what that might be. What do you take joy in doing? What do you do that is absolutely, in its own way, an effortless thing to do that gives you joy, that is easier to do than not to do in your life, okay? Then after a while, you see its effect not only on yourself, but the world around you, and you figure out, you know, that's pretty much what my will is, and I'm going to continue to do that until I can figure out anything that makes more sense to my life. And then when you've got to that point, you've got the momentum of the entire cosmos behind you, because you're not fighting it, that you're going with the universal stream. It's thy will be done. Christians can say, yeah, thy will be done. Yeah, this is, I'm going right with it there because it's mine. Okay. If that makes any sense. So once you've got to that point, that's the first step in any kind of magical operation. Oh, it's my will to have that happen. Okay. If I'm wrong, it'll blow up in my face in a most spectacular way, but at least I'll know, well, that wasn't my will. That's a...
Yeah, I'm learning by elimination here.
Yeah.
No, I love that this idea of how the will works, it basically, in my mind, is demonstrating that the human experience is not so different from the angelic or the goetic one, in that we all have jobs and we all have a part to play and a role to fulfill, a special poison and or medicine that we have to share to express the all beings' ineffable will and plan. I thought that was a funny thing for you to say, because it's like, yeah, the all beings' will is so encompassing, there's no way for me to comprehend it. I might as well focus on my own individual part of it. But it's almost as if the whole conception that man has free will, it's not even a demonstration of how time works, like whether everything is fixed or determined, so much as, do I have the ability to act against my will?
Right.
And I do. And that's what makes humans, even though we have jobs and roles and a part to play, the difference is that we can almost act against the divine expression. Though in a way that creates the tension necessary for life. I mean, that's what I love so much from Kabbalah, is this idea that, like you were saying, oh, well, we're all essentially one. Yes. But that 1, 2, 3 in the initial Keter, Chokmah, Binah of the all being, the I, implying an other, is the tension which creates my ability to have consciousness at all in the first place. So,
right. And that's the same tension that is manifest in your groin.
Yes.
For sex magic, okay, that's a very familiar expression of that, even in our own physiology. So,
yes, oh, love that. Well, I do want to get one question in that is kind of bringing us back to something we were talking about earlier. I wanted to bring it up when you were talking about the angels. When I was reading your book on Enochian magic, it seemed, one of the things that I found so interesting as a person who kind of teeter-totters back and forth between a chaos magic mindset and taking things more seriously than all that, you mentioned that it's quite possible that the reason why John Dee received the language through this lens of cryptography and like an Anglo phonemes for the sounds and the language is not because that is the explicit end-all, be-all of how the angelic language can be pronounced, how it could be received, but that there was something about the way that Dee's consciousness would have understood the message that required the angels to give him these prophetic visions in a way that he could organize and make sense.
Right. That's how he reorganized the machinery of his psychicness.
Yes,
I guess. Okay, he was like the Stephen Hawking of his day, and we're stuck with trying to understand and apply it to our own much more common intelligence. We're stuck with trying to interpret how that happened to him because of the way he was and how that would apply to us, mm-hmm. in the way we are. If Dee had been a musician instead of the smartest guy on the planet, okay, it would all come down in a totally different way. Okay. And if Dee had not been an intelligence agent, if he hadn't been a spy, Okay. He wouldn't have even been concerned with these 91 parts of the earth and what spirits were ruling what kings over in Europe and who loved Elizabeth and who didn't love Elizabeth. Okay. But he did. And we're having to put ourselves in the place of the smartest guy in the world to see how that really affects us. So yes, absolutely yes. The best we can do is to appreciate how it happened to him and be grateful for the fact that he took so many freaking notes that we can actually read about it and dissect it. But I'm sure my Enochian tablets would have been lettered all differently, okay? And as far as Enochian pronunciation and everything else, there are magicians whose sense of art, and make no doubt about it, magic is an art form too. There's magicians whose sense of art is that they can best access all of this if they do things letter perfect by whatever they think is the gospel book or the gospel mm-hmm. material of that magical technique. And that is absolutely fine. Okay. I am too lazy to do that. That's not my sense of art. Okay. My sense of art is much funkier than that. But if I can wrap my meat brain around how all of that happened to this smart guy over here, I can more or less see the big picture of how it's going to happen with me. And I can pick and choose the different elements of their experience and use those as tools in my experience. I'm most grateful with the way, from a Kabbalistic point of view, I can see what eventually developed, and it had to develop through the minds of other magicians, the Golden Dawn. Those weren't elemental tablets to Dee and Kelly. Okay, the Golden Dawn made those elemental tablets. There weren't four sides to the pyramids to each one of those lettered squares. Golden Dawn just took that ball and ran with it. And they ran with it in a way that I think Dee would have been thrilled. Okay. I'm just glad that there's something I can actually look at, wrap my meat brains around, and say, yes, this is a hey final. This is a hey final thing here in this tablet of earth. I can see how the tarot breaks all of that down in the four court cards of the subangles. I can see how the small cards are same small cards are just listed in a different order along the 36 squares of the Great Cross. Hey, I can get behind all of this stuff, and I can do a tarot reading and do an Enochian thing. And if I'm fascinated enough by this particular tarot reading, I can actually project into the Knight of Cups to see, and I got all those angels, okay, and I know how to get to them. Actually, I know how to get them to me. And it's to me, it's very practical. But there are those who whose sense of art, you know, forces them into a different way of looking at things. And my Goetic circle, after 40 years of doing Goetia, my Goetic circle is a silk cord that I can wrap around my own body and stay in the circle for days and days until the...
Yeah, you talk about that in your book.
Yeah. So you got to be your own magician. And sometimes it takes years and years and years. And sometimes you just figure stuff out right away.
So along that same vein, like if we are hypothesizing that the structure of my conscious mind reflects the way the divine can reveal itself to me. If, you know, if someone else had been that devoted and being that loud about wanting to make contact with these angels, but as you said, maybe they were a musician instead of well, music and math is pretty similar, but still, a musician over a mathematician, perhaps the entire language would have been given as a symphony, right?
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
So let's apply that to Crowley and Crowley's Book of the Law and Thelema itself. Do you think that Thelema as a revealed religion and Lam as an entity that Crowley contacted through a reworking of an older rite, because Liber Samech is just Crowley's reinterpretation of the bornless or headless, yeah. I just wonder if you know, because Crowley saw aliens, but Crowley already believed in aliens. Crowley was already on this kind of same vein as Blavatsky of the white and black brotherhood, and he bought into all that. So when the, you know, his alien came down and revealed the Book of the Law to him, do you believe that was a similar thing where Crowley was receiving a revelation through the lens of things he, a world structure he already had?
Absolutely. In the same way that it was dictated to him in English. He already had the language.
I never even thought of that. It wasn't even an angelic language or glossolalia in this case. It was just his wife saying word for word, this, 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 this.
Yes, and that's how everything will, everything important will come to us, too. What happens during the knowledge and conversation of the Holy Guardian Angel? That's what the Abramelin operation is about.
Yes,
getting that, and then from that level of consciousness, all these other magical things are more easily accomplished because you're a full-fledged human being then. Okay. we're like baby kangaroos in our mother's pouch until we've got the knowledge and conversation of the Holy Guardian Angel. And the Abramelin operation was how somebody in the 13th century had to use heavy, heavy ordnance to blow themselves out of the stupid mindset of medieval magic and superstitious. Okay. Abraham the Jew, who was a real historical character. I mean, you read about him as alchemist, and he was like a Henry Kissinger, you know. And anyway, this guy obviously had trouble falling in love. He wasn't a romantic kind of guy, obviously. He's a Kabbalist, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, I read the book, so it seems kind of dry, not very funny, dude.
Oh, God, you know, he got off talking about, you know, like Von Velling, got off talking about salt, you know. The thing is, for him, it took 18 months of trying to get out of himself in order to fall in love with something.
Oh, there's that sex magic again.
Absolutely. Not only that, but to get him out of his dry old self to fall in love with something, and at the same time, get himself to a place where he could actually surrender himself and accept love back with that same intensity. And that's what it's all about. Okay. The Hindus would say, and that's what it's going to take to get that heart chakra spinning. You know, okay. That's, you got the Beatles when they said, the love you take is equal to the love that you make. Okay. Greatest thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be loving in return. Both of them. You got to have both. It's an alternating current. And when you actually do it, when you get out of yourself enough to just send out an intense ray of love to anything, a beloved, if you fall in love with possums, it doesn't and if you're able to receive back that same intensity of love, it sets a love feedback going, like when you put a microphone up to a speaker and goes, you know, just keeps getting louder and louder. Well, the same thing happens there. And that's the Holy Guardian Angel. And that experience is a timeless moment. Okay. It's not like, you know, you grow a permanent boil. No, it's a timeless moment. And so it's forever. It was forever when you got it. It was for once you got it, you realize you already had it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's a forever thing, and it really burns out the carbon in your internal combustion engine of the soul. And with that newly lubricated self, everything that you do from then on is informed by that new level of consciousness. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to have anybody sign off your paperwork. Yes, you are now an Adeptus Minor, okay? You don't have to do any of that. You don't even realize that anything has changed because you're so close to yourself. You don't realize when you've woken up until you realize, stop and think about how asleep you were 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. I would argue that if you wanted the angel to give you some sort of certificate that said, I am an adept now, then you would not have actually achieved K&C. I would think that if that was still so important to you, that you would maybe be close, but not quite there yet.
That'd be a big tip off, yeah.
Yeah.
But from then on, any form of magic that you do is being done by a different kind of magician. Mm-hmm. A new, improved you. And you realize that not only is it a new, improved you, a holy guardian angelized you, but you've changed the guardian angel too. The guardian angel is now a lawnized guardian angel. You become a single entity. Okay.
Oh, I love this because it makes so much sense when you think about it in the Gnostic Jewish tradition of the Zen Anpin who lives in Tifereth, who is the holy guardian angel, and the Shekinah and Malkuth, which is us, that they both are copulating with the shadowed version of themselves because they're not facing each other. They're facing mirrors, and then the mirror reflects back, and so they're each copulating with the shadow. So if they turn and they face each other, and now they're copulating, then they become a union, one new thing, who neither are now copulating with shadows, they're copulating with each other. Ugh, I love that. I'd never thought about that before. The angel changing.
I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad you called.
Yes, I'm glad. I feel like I've learned a lot. This has been a lovely conversation. I feel more like I have a deeper understanding of the way that the hierarchy of spirits, both angelic and goetic, than I did before walking into this. I normally ask my guests for their final question, is there anything that you would like to say? Anything that you would feel remiss if we got off the air before you had imparted to others?
I nothing comes to mind.
No, I love the vast discrepancy of answers I get to that question. I either get people ready to go on another 30-minute rant or people who are like, no, I'm done.
I'm done. Be lazy, he says.
Hey, if that's your will, I am all about it. We have too much emphasis towards constant movement in our society. And if we're talking about, you know, breaking out of the societal conception of what our will is and being receptive to what our true will is, to be able to say, my will is to flip and rest, is a hugely big deal, in my opinion.
Well, ask my wife. I rest too much.
Well, this was such a pleasure. I enjoyed every moment of it, and I do hope that you'll give Rabbi Blaine Clifford my regards.
I will.
Thank you.
He's twirling his propeller.